It's time for Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis. Doug is a certified financial planner, providing you with a personal financial hotline to answer your questions about tax planning, investments, retirement planning, estate planning, and education planning. Doug and Linda are the owners of Lewis Financial Management, a registered investment advisory firm in Raleigh, providing financial and investment services since 1983. Doug and Linda will be answering your questions on WPTF's phone lines anytime during the next hour. Call 860-9783. That's 860-WPTF. Call toll-free 1-800-662-7979. And for mobile phones, it's star 680. And now, Doug and Linda Lewis and Money Matters.
Hello there, North Carolina. This is Doug Lewis, Certified Financial Planner, once again welcoming you to Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis. Money Matters with Doug and Linda has been providing you with a personal financial hotline for all of your questions about investments, estate planning, tax planning, money management, and retirement planning for over 20 years. And again, with me as usual tonight is my wife, Linda, who works with me in our firm, Lewis Financial Management.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. Doug and I are the owners of Lewis Financial Management, a registered investment advisory firm in Raleigh, providing investment and financial advice since 1983.
For over 20 years, we've been answering your questions on the WPTF phone lines. They are your questions and our answers.
So sit back and enjoy, or if you're free, call us tonight on the open lines. We'll take your calls anytime during the next hour. You're free to call in and ask any financial question about your own personal financial planning. Call us at 860-9783. That's 860-WPTF. Or you can call us toll-free long distance at 1-800-662-7979.
Well, financial planning is everyone's business, and still for most folks, money matters are just a big puzzle. Folks have questions about planning for retirement, planning for a child's college education. They don't know the difference between financial planning and money management. They want to know a lot these days. They want to know what's a mutual fund, what's a limited partnership, what's a REIT, what's a will, what's a living will. And yes, it really can confuse you, but you're not alone. Because in a world crowded with new investments, changing tax laws, rapidly evolving insurance products, and volatile economic cycles, more and more people are looking for clear direction in their financial lives. And yet, unfortunately, the busier and the more successful they are, the less time they have to sort out their financial affairs. And people are asking, is there any solution?
Well, yes, Doug, there certainly is a solution. Out of this increasingly complicated financial environment has come a new breed of professionals that are trying to solve people's money puzzles. And that's the certified financial planner.
It's the certified financial planner who offers something that people don't get from the traditional stockbroker, money manager, accountant, insurance agent, or bank trust officer. And that's a way to consolidate all aspects of people's financial affairs into one financial plan. It's the certified financial planner who knows how to pull together all six areas of a client's financial life.
Doug, I think for many people, the first area of financial planning is cash flow planning, with questions about their emergency fund, their mortgage, their credit cards, and reducing their debt.
Well, yes, Linda, and yet for many people, the second area of financial planning is retirement planning. Those who are working want to know how to compute what they'll need to live on during retirement and how much they should be saving for retirement. They want to know what investments they should choose from the choices in their company's 401k plan. Others are retiring and have received a lump sum payout option from their company's retirement plan, and they want to know, should they take it? And if so, how should they invest it?
Well, Doug, the third area of financial planning that must be dealt with is estate planning. For most people, over their working years, their estate has grown. How can they reduce their estate taxes? And they wonder, are their simple wills sufficient, or maybe they should be considering the complicated world of trusts?
If that's the third area, Linda, the fourth area of financial planning cannot be overlooked. This is tax planning. People are interested in both tax reduction strategies and tax reduction investments. Home mortgage interest, charitable giving, tax shelters, tax-free bonds, questions about capital gains taxes, estate taxes, gift taxes, and how to sell real estate tax-free using trusts. What a confusion.
Well, Doug, we can't forget the fifth area of financial planning, which is insurance planning. How much life insurance does a family really need? Do they have too little insurance or maybe too much insurance? Should they have whole life, term, or universal? Should they have long-term nursing care coverage?
You're right, Lynn. And of course, the sixth and most important area of financial planning is investment planning. Here, the questions never stop. What's the best way to diversify my investments? Is now a safe time to invest in stocks? What about bonds? What kind of stock mutual funds? Bond mutual funds? Equipment leasing partnerships? REITs? CDs? Gold? Annuities?
So, Doug, it seems that at last it's time for people to understand that a certified financial planner is really the only one who can tie together all six parts of their financial puzzle. And to you out there listening, if you've got a question on your mind about cash flow planning, retirement planning, estate planning, tax planning, insurance, or investments, call us now on the open lines and we'll answer your financial planning questions. Those numbers to call are 860-9783. That's 860-WPTF. Out of towners, call us toll free at 1-800-662-7979. And if you just want to sit back and listen to the callers through the years, welcome to the show.
Investment advice through Lewis Financial Management. Investments through HPEC Inc. HPEC Inc. and Lewis Financial Management are not affiliated entities.
Well, welcome, North Carolina, and thanks for joining us once again on Money Matters on News Radio 680 WPTF. And welcome, Doug. Welcome, Deborah. And here we are on the 10-year anniversary, a very
somber,
heartfelt memorial to all of those who have suffered loss, and all of America has suffered loss. Our hearts go out to you, and we remember you and all your loved ones that are no longer here. It was a big tragedy, wasn't it, Doug?
Yeah, I think there aren't words to express the effect on individual lives, on the economic lives, on the psychological lives, but from the viewpoint of the financial planning profession, we saw many, many changes that happened in personal financial lives of some of those. And yes, we remember it very well. I remember that day as if it was yesterday when we were staring at the television and watching that plane go into the tower, and we couldn't believe it. You and I, at that moment, we had plane reservations to get on a plane the next day.
To go to Long Island.
Yeah.
We were going to a wedding, I remember.
That's right.
Family.
Wedding. Right. We spent the...
But anyway, our hearts do go out, and...
Life goes on.
It's a new generation of children and grandchildren and lives full of pain and yet going on.
Americans are resilient. We are a bounce-back nation, and we have a lot to be proud of.
We really do. And I think the whole situation brought up a lot of questions that all of a sudden had to be answered from the financial planning world that a lot of people didn't know.
That's right.
We're going to have to be dealt with so immediately.
And I think with all the increased security, it makes people more alert and more cautious, but... life goes on. Well, Doug, there was a very interesting article that appeared in the Wall Street Journal.
Which one was that, Lynn?
It was on the age of macro investing.
I saw that headline. That was very interesting. Macro investing. You know, actually, here we are on September 11th, and since September 11th, 2001, investment portfolios, at least to many people, seem to be at the mercy of what some professionals call macro forces, like natural disasters and geopolitical shocks and sudden systemic failures of stock markets, national economies, oh my gosh, Hurricane Katrina, financial crisis to the Japanese earthquake, the unraveling of Europe. So I saw that headline, macro investing. What'd you catch out of it?
Well, as it looked at the last decade and the crises that have happened over the years, when Lehman failed.
That's right. Macro event.
And then also with the European debt crisis.
Another macro event.
the S&P downgrades in the for the U.S.
No one ever thought that would happen. Huge macro event.
And the recent earthquake in Japan.
It's like macro events. Some have called it have called them black swans, totally unpredictable, and you can't even think of them as risks. But
What does it say you should do, Doug?
Well, I guess I have my views. I don't know what the writer felt who wrote the article. What'd you catch from the writer?
Well, the writer said that if you're bouncing back from Lehman's failure, that you should think longer term. Don't even try to beat the high-speed traders, but instead lengthen your time horizon. And U.S. stocks have roughly doubled since the financial crisis for those who didn't bail out at the bottom.
Isn't that incredible? Isn't that incredible? The stocks have doubled since the bottom of the market after Lehman failed. So I agree with that. Think long term. Don't be caught up with the day-to-day trading, because the day-to-day trading is driven much by computers. You can never beat them. So I agree with that view. What else did it say?
Well, with regard to the European debt crisis, it's important to focus on fundamentals. And financial distress sends markets down, but it also raises the potential future returns. So tune out all the market noise. And like Warren Buffett says, ignore the political and the economic forecasts.
That's really
interesting.
Hard
comment, isn't it?
Well, it's hard for a lot of people to do. They see economic crises, they see political crises, and they have a knee-jerk reaction to think, wow, that's my investment portfolio. But that chatter, that's not real. That's not real to what is long-term financial independence type of investing.
Well, the fundamentals of companies and those companies that you're going to be investing in.
That's right.
Those are the bigger questions.
Those are the bigger questions, Deborah. That's exactly right. We think of a company like AT&T. We think of a company like Boeing.
Caterpillar.
McDonald's. These companies that are reporting how strong are their fundamentals.
Still thriving.
Still thriving.
High cash. Going into different countries and,
yes,
and really expanding. And you don't hear those.
That's right. That doesn't make exciting news on Cramer.
Right. Or any of the shows.
All right. So what else did you see there, Lynn?
And along with that, we had the recent S&P downgrades in the U.S. So his comment was, diversify more. With the market so correlated, it's harder to spread bets effectively. But it is critical, since owning only a handful of stocks is riskier than ever.
I think that's fair. Diversify more. Of course, a lot of people are going to say, how do I do it? But I'll save my comments until you finish what the article said.
And then the recent earthquake in Japan, when calamities and natural disasters occur, people get frightened and they freeze. But his comment was that you need to get aggressive. So when headlines scare off investors, buying into those fears may pay off more generously in the near future than in the recent past. What do you think about that, Doug?
Absolutely. Makes a lot of sense. The time to invest, if you are doing any timing, is when things are bad. You know, you could take a cue from the greatest investor that we think of these days, Warren Buffett. He said, we will continue to ignore political and economic forecasts, which are an expensive distraction for many investors and businessmen. Do you know when he said that, Deborah?
No, when?
1994. Well, what's happened since then is exactly that.
Right.
He said no one could have foreseen in 94, when he wrote this, the huge expansion of the Vietnam War, wage and price controls, two oil shocks, the resignation of a president, the dissolution of the Soviet Union, a one-day drop in the Dow Jones of 500 points, et cetera, et cetera. And then he said, we usually make our best purchases when apprehensions about some macro event were at a peak. A different set of major shocks is sure to occur in the next 30 years. Well, we've had them.
We have had them.
I mean, he said it.
Yeah.
And at that time, he said, and I believe he would say again today, we will neither try to predict these nor to profit from them. If we can identify businesses similar to those we purchased in the past external surprises will have little effects on our own long-term results. I really like that view.
I do, too. I think that all of these external events and calamities, I think they point to that bigger thought, which is that risk can come from outside the markets themselves.
That's right.
That has nothing to do with markets.
That's exactly right. Nor are stocks substantially more volatile, believe it or not, than they have been in the past. Might seem so, but that's not the case. Notwithstanding what they seem, the frighteningly sharp drops in stocks last month and also in May of 2010, the market's surges up and down have been no more extreme in the past few years on average than they were in the 1930s and barely any worse than they were in the mid-70s. So bear markets may be gut-wrenching, but they're the only means by which future profits and returns can be raised. I really think that you have to turn off the TV. Realize that's another story that has nothing to do with long-term financial independence and how to go ahead and go through these macro events.
And the bottom line is, if you are investing, whatever your situation may be, it is important to work with a financial planner, a certified financial planner that has the expertise to help you identify what are your goals and objectives and needs, and how do we get from point A to point Z.
Very
in
good.
Planning for financial independence. You're listening to Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis on News Radio 680 WPTF. If you've got a question about your investing, your portfolio, retirement, or if you're losing your job, call us on the open lines at 860-WPTF. That's 860-9783. Out of towners, it is toll free at 1-800-662-7979.
You can get more information on their website, lfmadvisor.com. That's lfmadvisor.com.
Hi, Patrick. This is Doug Lewis, certified financial planner. How can I help you?
Hi, Doug. My grandmother bought a couple of years ago a nursing home, and they've been paying off the debt and everything for a long time. She's built the business, and she is working right now on trying to lower her assets because it is in the millions, and she's really, really worried about the inheritance tax. She doesn't want it to be sold when she dies to pay off the inheritance tax.
Right.
Any tips on that? Or
There are some things she can do, depending. Is there debt on the property?
Yes.
There's mortgage debt on the property?
Yes.
What's her health?
It's good now.
Well, she really needs to meet with a financial planner and do estate planning.
Right.
Two ways to do that. One is the possibility of a testamentary charitable remainder unit trust. A testamentary CRT will work, and insurance to go ahead and provide enough liquidity to pay the income taxes if she doesn't go that way. But you tie the two together with a wealth replacement trust and a wealth preservation trust, and she could get herself down to a zero estate tax.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah. It's complicated when you've got a business, but it can be done. But, yeah, let Linda know about that, because that's a very sophisticated strategy using the wealth replacement trust with a business, two-generation trust, and a testamentary trust. But it can be done.
If you'll call me at the office, our number is 919-872-7000 in Raleigh, and I'll be happy to send you some information.
Well, thank you very much.
Take care, Patrick. Thanks for calling. All right.
Bye-bye now.
If you have a money matter that you'd like to discuss with Doug, call in locally right now at 860-9783. That's 860-WPTF. And if you're long distance, it's toll-free at 800-662-7979 or star 680 on your car phones. Well, Doug, a legendary market skeptic is really upbeat about stocks.
What are you talking about?
Well, there was a recent article in the Wall Street Journal about Mr. Bogle.
I figured that. You know, when we talk about Warren Buffett, of course, he's one of the great names in present investing. And that's on the individual security side and how to analyze. Then you have other great names or big names. And Bogle himself, of course, has been around for a long time. He's now 82 years old. He's survived at least a half a dozen heart attacks since 1960. He had a heart transplant in 1996. He's a big name. And of course, his name is linked to index mutual funds. But I like his view because his view is the same as Buffett's, that buy and hold long-term stock mutual funds are going to do well. I think he actually feels that you'll still average about 7% over the next 10 years, which means doubling your money in 7 years and so forth. But I also know that he is very upset with the ETFs because the world of mutual funds and index funds, which he was so much responsible for, you might say, has been shifted around dramatically with a lot of leverage, with ETFs, with other kinds of things. And he feels that they really have torn up a lot of logic to where he felt. But over the long term, I am sure that he is just as upbeat about stocks as Buffett. And so I am too.
He had a very interesting comment. He said, people ought to get over the illusion of higher expectations and realize that they may have to invest for longer time periods, start earlier, and save more.
Good advice. Very good advice. All right.
You're listening to Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis on Money Matters on News Radio 680 WPTF. If you're out of town and you're coming back from the beach, you can call us on our toll-free line at 800-662-7979 or on the open lines at 860-WPTF. That's 860-9783.
Well, there was an interesting article about the mistakes housing investors make, those people who are wanting to buy and get into the landlord business.
Wow. Yeah, I think we could make a long, long list. What kind of mistakes did you see in that article, Debs?
Well, it began with talking about just the general principle of, well, if the prices of houses are low, why shouldn't I be someone who wants to buy these houses and try and rent them out? But of course.
A lot of mistakes there. A lot of mistakes.
Right.
Just because they're cheap, I would say mistake number one would be don't confuse cheap for a good deal.
Right.
Because you can get it's true. You can buy some houses for ridiculously low prices right now, but that doesn't mean you can rent them out. Homes in deserted subdivisions, they're not any more appealing to renters than they are to buyers. And the same is true for less attractive properties in areas that have less desirable school districts.
And that's usually something that people are really considering. If they are going to be a renter, they're someone who is going to choose your rental property
Based
on a school district.
That's right.
They definitely went in through a lot of the mistakes. The next one they went through was, or pointed out, was overlooking the key cost and just knowing the potential rent isn't enough. If you're going to expect that property to just generate rent, you're going to be underestimating what you're going to need to spend and what you will be spending.
That's right. What other kinds of costs are involved when you rent a property out, when you own a rental property, Linda?
Oh, well, if something breaks down or if you got to get something repaired, like the refrigerator, or if trees fall down after a hurricane, you've got to get somebody out there to do the repairs.
I remember once you and I tried that as an example to see what happened with the rental property, and we got that, I think it was a toilet got broken on Christmas Eve, and we got the call from the tenant that sold me on, let's not go that game.
And I have really close friends who do a lot of this business, and there's just the general repainting of houses. So you have that month or two where you need to repaint in between tenants.
That's right. That's right. What other mistakes were pointed out in the article about trying to go into rental real estate as an investment?
Just forgetting that time is money and time is your biggest enemy. So any time that it's not being rented, you're losing money. You're
That's
paying
right.
that mortgage payment.
Yeah. Yeah. Boy, time is money, and you got to realize that you're going to lose if you can't go ahead and keep it rented. So you've got to factor in that vacancy period. And also, if you buy in the fall, you might not be able to replace the roof until spring.
That's right. And therefore not have it rented.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, assuming that you'll just sit back and watch the rent roll in was another huge one they pointed out. Definitely naive to just think that it's going to be a cash machine or a money-making business without all of those costs that need to be put out at first.
Oh, yeah. When you are a landlord, you are now a rent collector. Just like homeowners who can't pay their mortgages, tenants lose their jobs, they stop paying their rent, and then evicting them can take weeks, and some steal appliances or other property and so forth. No, you don't just think I'm just going to be, you know, clipping coupons and collecting my rents.
Number five, one other mistake is underestimating your repair costs.
Boy, you're going to be making a lot of repairs. You may find wood rotted or mold when, and, you know, around cracked bathtubs. Carpets in rental homes typically must be replaced every 5 years.
I remember that 1 year we had some renters and the pipes froze. Do you remember that?
Oh,
and
boy.
Then we had to call some restoration folks to come out and suck out all the water out of
Was that the year we decided we will not get into rental real estate again?
Right.
We'll go mutual funds
and
investments.
Oh, that was terrible. But anyway, don't underestimate that you may have some repairs waiting for you.
And, you know, I would say, I would say that the biggest mistake people make is assuming that a rental is the same as owning your own home. You know, when you own your own home, you're willing to put up with some flaws. But a renter, sometimes they're not the same. A renter is going to call you and say, no, I want this fixed. I want that fixed. And then some states and communities have strict laws for landlords that you've got to go ahead and abide by. Now, you can get a property manager to handle it for you. But if you do, then you're going to be paying up to 10% of the monthly rent for your management fees, and that becomes a problem. I think the bottom line is, forget it. Don't go rental real estate if you're thinking as a way of getting yourself financially independent. The hassles and the headaches get bigger as you get older, not less.
And definitely if you're thinking of going into it just because the price of houses has gone down, that's the wrong reason to begin with.
That is the wrong reason, Deborah. Thanks for bringing us back to that one, because that is the wrong reason.
It might be easier to add to your investment portfolio and sit back and watch your returns come in, right? You're listening to Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis on News Radio 680 WPTF. And we hope you're having a good Sunday afternoon, enjoying this beautiful fall weather we're having. Call us on the open lines if you've got a question about your investments, your retirement planning, or estate planning. 860-WPTF. That's 860-9783. Out-of-towners, it is toll-free at 1-800-662-7979.
You can get more information on their website, lfmadvisor.com. That's lfmadvisor.com.
Let's take another call, Doug.
Mary Ann, this is Doug Lewis, Certified Financial Planner. How can I help you?
Can you, on a trust, designate, say, like at the end of a year, that a certain amount of the trust be given to the charity at the end of a year on a yearly basis? Can you do that?
Yes. As a matter of fact, what the key are the six players of the charitable remainder Section 664 trust. The donor, which in this case, I guess, would be yourself, right?
Yes.
And if you set up such a trust, you want to name yourself as the trustee, and you want to give yourself certain powers. And that would be one of the powers that you would give yourself in the trust document, the power to take out part of either the principal or the income from your trust to distribute to charities during your lifetime at the end of each year. Or you could say, which is the more common way, let's wait until my death. In the meantime, I want it all to grow as a retirement plan for me and pay me income, and then there'll be a bigger gift at the rear end for the charity. You can do it either way.
I have been listening to you for a number of weeks and have just been intrigued by some of the information that you've shared on ways that we fail to reap the benefits of interest.
Who is that movie actor, Linda, who said, make my day? She just made my day.
Thank you, Mary Ann.
I'm glad someone out there is listening.
Well, it's something that I've reached the time in my life where I realize I have not been wise in controlling my money. I always felt like I really didn't have an estate because it was more or less just very little in savings. And I'm now realizing that I would have had more money if I had just controlled it in a more logical way.
Mm-hmm.
For example, my question to you was, in paying tithing to my church each week or each month, I could take the 10% of my income and put it in the charitable trust, which mm-hmm. could be to my church,
uh-huh.
and I would draw an interest off of that, and then at the end of each year, in order to pay my tithing on a yearly basis, at the end of each year, I could designate it that this amount of that money went to that church. But in the meantime, I would be building that money through the year and receiving an interest back from it.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes, that's exactly correct. You can do it any way that you want. The percentages, you want to, it's sort of like chickens and eggs. The chicken has to be big enough to produce the kind of eggs we want. But the classic way to do what you're talking about would be maybe to, let's say a person has, I can think of so many different types of things that Linda and I have done in the way of these types of trusts for clients. That number at the office, by the way, is 919-872-7000. Let's say a person happens to have a piece of real estate that they would like, after they have passed away, they would like it maybe to go to some charitable cause. All right. Well, they can give this real estate to this charitable trust. The charitable trust can sell it 100% tax-free and avoid all the capital gain. Let's say now maybe there's $100,000 or $200,000 of cash in this charitable trust. It can then be reinvested by the trustee, namely yourself, into mutual funds that are producing a nice income. The charitable trust pays you income through the year, and the trustee is given the right at the end of the year to take whatever percentage he or she chooses and make that as a distribution to one or more of the charities, such as the church tithing that you're talking about.
There's a tremendous amount of interest lost that people could acquire through handling their money in just a different fashion from what they understand. The interest on that, on 10% of your income over a period of time, would be quite a nice little savings.
It's very nice. You know, it's the concept of social capital. Many people don't understand. They think of taxes as this horrible thing that they're facing. But taxes isn't going to a person. Taxes is going to help certain parts of society, theoretically. And our capital is composed of both what we own for our own consumption and what we owe to society. That part that we owe to society is called social capital.
That's the part you can't keep.
That's the part that you can't keep.
But we've discovered a way that you can control it.
Right.
Because basically what happens, Marianne, is folks that implement this strategy can now find a way to increase their income. You can increase your income. You can also, along the way, reduce your taxes. You can empower your family. You can also impact your community and perpetuate your values.
All by learning the principles of social capital. But most people simply just write a check to the IRS each year and don't even realize that they have the power to direct it to do what they want to do for society.
In a financial statement, would the money in the charitable trust show up as an asset?
No.
Well, that's a very good question. The principal does not, but the income does. The income is a transferable asset. You can actually assign your interest in that income stream over. Now, let me say this. It's used in both ways. I have seen clients going through divorce who want to make sure that it is not able to be assigned and not touchable. And many people use it to avoid potential litigation issues and liability issues. On the other hand, I know others, which is more common, to where they want it to be seen as an income stream and they want it to be seen as a valued asset on their financial statement. And yes, it is. It's the discounted future value of basically picture. You've got a bunch of chickens in chicken houses, and you're going to live 30 years. You've got to figure out how many eggs are those chickens going to lay over the next 30 years, and then discount them back to present value. You know, how many chickens would it take today to lay all those eggs in 1 year? And that's the value of the discounted income stream on your financial statement.
Thank you. I really enjoy your program, and I appreciate the information.
Well, thank you for calling, Marianne. I hope we can help you.
If you'd like any further information, call me at the office in Raleigh. That number is 919-872-7000. That's 919-USA-7000.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. You're listening to Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis, and we're taking your calls at 680 WPTF. So if you've got a question, call us at 860-9783. If you're out of town, it is toll-free at 1-800-662-7979. Cellular callers, it is star 680.
You know, DeMarianne's call, we have two current situations where two new clients are coming in with those exact kinds of concerns and, you know,
isn't
questions.
Well, we're actually doing two charitable trusts right now, the same type of trust, each of them very different for two new clients that have come to us. Their situation's very different, but it is still the most creative financial planning tool available that you can get a lot of multiple benefits from if you know how to do it right.
A tidbit of news that I read about North Carolina universities, about 3,000 have lost their jobs in the North Carolina universities system at the various universities. And if you may have lost your job, if you're one of these individuals that have lost your jobs, don't panic. Make sure you get all the paperwork about your current retirement plan.
Yeah, we're out there to help you.
And we are here to help you. Call us at our offices in Raleigh at 919-872-7000.
Or go to our website.
At lfmadvisor.com. And write down your questions. And, you know, as you're preparing to find a new job, make sure that you take care of unfinished business with regard to your retirement plan, because you can do a rollover, can't you, Doug, if you are in, depending on the plan.
Yes, and you need to know how not to go and do something wrong. We covered that last week quite a bit, you remember.
Seek competent advice. And also, I also read about Bank of America downsizing, and about 40,000 nationwide are slated to lose their jobs with Bank of America. So there's a lot happening in
people know there's help out there. Call us. We can help.
Doug, there was also another interesting article in the Weekend Investor of the news of the Wall Street Journal about wills and how you can leave one heir less. What did you see that article?
I didn't read it thoroughly, Linda. No, I didn't. But I do know that many people confuse financial planning by thinking it's just money management. And they forget that a true financial planning expert is one that deals with all kinds of wills, estates, trust issues also. What was the article about?
Well, Rachel, the author of this article, said that it is one of the toughest questions that parents will face when they're drawing up a will. And that is, should they leave an equal share to each child?
Wow, that comes up all the time. I guess a lot of parents have the feeling that I got to be fair to all of them, and it's only proper and moral to leave everybody the same, but that's not real life in our experience in my practice.
Right, and you know, she noted that no two members of a family are exactly alike, and parents may well take that into account. But so when you're drawing up an estate plan, there's a danger to uneven distributions beyond hurting feelings.
What kind of dangers are there? I mean,
well, wills that favor one child over another are executed haphazardly, and they might be vulnerable to legal challenges.
It's very common for a disinherited child or a child that feels that I can think of a client right now whose mother just passed away, client of ours, and there are two sons. They're both, one of them is my client, and they're both in their 60s, but the mother didn't want one of the sons to get anything. And I know that son is not happy. And so, yeah, there can be battles afterwards.
So if a parent wants to protect either the child from the other litigious child or to just eliminate any contention between the two, what can they do?
There are a lot of strategies that you can do. The crucial thing is to avoid doing nothing. If you just do nothing, you can leave the child that you wanted to go ahead and take care of the most with a big mess on their hands. So you can do certain types of trusts. We've done lots of unusual and creative trusts. You can go ahead and have your desires made known in a very cogent fashion. You can do series of wills. What did the writer of the article suggest, Linda?
Well, she noted that in some cases, aside from the will having been drawn up, sometimes folks will do a video stating what their wishes are in that format. Anyway, I'd like to defer that to the end of the article, but she noted that families take into account many different factors when they're determining how they want to distribute their property. And, you know, one of the concerns may be that one child may be far more successful financially than the other. And one may have three child of his own while the other one only has one child.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the parent may have a close, loving relationship with one child, but as you said earlier, be estranged from another.
Right.
And many parents want to support their children who need more financial help, but while others may want to repay their children who've provided important support or caregiving. So, you know, if you become elderly and your health is declining, many times one of the children takes the responsibility of being a caregiver.
I've had that. Yeah, I've had that situation. Actually, I think I've got maybe one client. Yeah, mm-hmm. Right now, at least one or two. That's exactly it. The child that steps up to the bat and takes over the responsibility of being the primary caregiver. The parent wants to go ahead and repay that child for all of the love and care and financial attention and sacrifices. And then and sometimes there's other situations I can think of we've had in the past where you've got a spendthrift, where you've got a child who's not financially responsible, and you want to protect them from their own weaknesses. So we can set up a certain type of a trust called a spendthrift trust, where the child can't be tempted by some unscrupulous person to go ahead and get their whole inheritance and blow it.
You know, and some parents may already have helped one child considerably more than another during their lifetime, such as paying for a pricey graduate school education or providing money for a down payment on a house. So, but the upshot is what's fair may not result in an equal split. So, you know, on the one hand, some parents want to give it to their children while they're still alive, and they want to see the benefits of, you know, the fruits of their labors. But on the other hand, you know, one thing that she noted in the article is that sometimes if you don't will your assets equitably, one of the children could be litigious.
Yeah.
You could be facing some kind of a legal situation. And the end of the article said that, you know, on the one hand, some people do serial wills where they can demonstrate that you've reviewed the will each time but chose not to change the primary distribution of property on a whim.
That's, and that strategy is the one that fights the contention later on that my mom or my dad was mentally incompetent and was swayed by my brother or whoever got the inheritance, and therefore the series of wills takes care of it. Actually, it's not a bad thought, but I like a better one. I have a better strategy than that.
And what's that?
I like to put it in a revocable living trust ahead of time.
Yes.
And then the child who was either left out or treated in a certain way, that child doesn't have any right to see anything, doesn't know anything. So you can be confidential. You can be anonymous that way. Because this is done ahead of time while they're alive.
And that's one of the huge benefits of a revocable living trust.
It is. It's one of the big benefits that you can do it now during your lifetime. And then at death, there is no will.
That's right.
There's nothing to see.
That's right.
She ended the article by saying that there are also a number of safeguards that you can include in your estate plan to help minimize future conflicts, such as clauses stipulating that any future disputes be settled through mediation or arbitration rather than costly litigation. And some wills and trusts even include a no contest clause that usually disinherit heirs who attempt to challenge the document. So put it in writing and
I think
with a competent advisor, right?
Right. I think probably we've seen as many cases as you can imagine through the years, and no two are ever the same. But the crucial thing is to work with somebody who can get it all worked out the way you want it. And
And that's through all the scenarios of what could go wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, that's probably what you spend more of your time on is, in my opinion or in my experience, this is what has happened with other clients, other scenarios.
That's right.
What things we can protect ahead of time.
Yeah. All of a sudden, a child that you really cared quite a bit about marries someone that is really not the kind of person you want as an heir, and you want to figure out a way that it can go just to the child but not to the spouse.
Correct, right.
There's all kinds of situations out there.
And so in broad strokes, if you're, to all of our listeners, if you are one of those folks that have procrastinated about doing your estate documents and setting up proper estate plans, put that on your checklist as something you want to do before year end. And if you've got questions, you can call us at Lewis Financial Management in Raleigh at 919-872-7000. That's USA 7000. You're listening to Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis on News Radio 680 WPTF. And if you've got a question, call us on the open lines at 860-WPTF. That's 860-9783. Out of towners, it is toll free, 1-800-662-7979.
You can get more information on their website, lfmadvisor.com. That's lfmadvisor.com.
You're listening to Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis, and we're going to take a caller right now.
Hello, Bill.
Hello, how are you doing?
All right, how can I help you? This is Doug Lewis.
Doug, I have a gentleman who's trying to sell me a trust, and it sounds good. But he wants $9,000 for me to go and hear about this trust. And I'm dumb and don't know anything at all about trust. I'm going to hang up.
Well, no, I got to find out who you are, and I got to ask you some questions first about yourself, because that's like saying, you know, I think I want to buy some clothes, and that's the end of it. I got to find out what size you are.
Okay.
Okay. How old are you, Bill?
I'm 60.
60 years old. You working or you're retired?
I'm retired.
Retired. You married?
Yes, I'm happily married.
And how old's your wife?
She's 58.
Wife's 58, husband's 50, and wife's 58. What's your income, Bill?
Oh, it's five figures, six figures.
I need to put some numbers down here so
about
I can...
$90,000.
All right, you're making $90,000 a year, and what are your living expenses running?
Oh, I have no idea, 60-something like that.
Okay, so we're bringing in about 90, and we're spending about 60. You're including taxes there?
Yeah, I'm including taxes.
All right. So we've got more than we need as far as income. Now, what about the estate side? How much is your what do you have in the way of your investment portfolio at the present time?
$500,000.
You've got $500,000, and what's it in?
Pardon?
What is it invested in?
What's it invested in? It's invested in half in an annuity and half in a mutual fund type thing.
My goodness, that's terrible. You got $500,000 spread only in two investments?
Well, one of the investments is a multi-investment.
It's a deferred annuity, a variable annuity?
Yes.
And you got the other half in one mutual fund?
Yes.
All right. Now, what is the value? How about the rest of your estate? We need to know about this, but to find out what kind of trust is suitable for you. What about your home?
Oh, it's worth $300,000.
All right. We're up to $800,000. Personal property?
Got a place at the beach.
So another what? $150,000, $200,000
on? Yeah, and I got some rental property.
Oh, my goodness.
All right, hang on. That's 5 and 3 is 8. We're up to about $1 million, and your rental property. Do you have any idea? Have you had a financial statement printed anytime recently?
Worth about $1,250,000.
All right. How about life insurance? Any life insurance?
No.
All right, no life insurance at all?
None.
All right, now, who has approached you about this trust, or did you approach somebody?
No, they approached me.
And
it's one of these pyramid-type trusts.
There's no such thing as a pyramid-type trust.
Oh, well, we've got a trust within a trust within a trust.
Well, let me ask you. There are some people who have been marketing a program, and they build a limited partnership and their corporation and several trusts inside.
That's the kind of thing.
All right. You want to watch out, by the way. First of all, the world of trust breaks down into, now we'll test Linda's knowledge, what's the first division of trust, Linda?
Well, there's the revocable living trust, trust.
Revocable versus
and then irrevocable.
Irrevocable. First thing is a trust can either be revocable or irrevocable.
I'm up that far.
All right. The irrevocable trust will say can save estate taxes. A revocable trust cannot save any estate taxes. Many people make you think they can. The revocable trust cannot save estate taxes. So this revoke this to save estate taxes, you need to set up, if that's what you want to do, a trust that is irrevocable. Now, if your estate is only worth $1,250,000, did you know that you can pass that estate without any estate taxes to you? Do you have children, by the way?
Yes, I knew that.
Here's what you need to do. To pass that $1,200,000 tax-free, you do need to use trust. Yes, but here's how you do it. By the way, never own anything jointly. You want nothing to be owned in joint ownership, or this will ruin your estate plan. Each of you set up a testamentary, irrevocable, credit shelter trust. The income goes to the surviving one, but the principal goes to the children. And that way you can do it, and you don't need to spend $9,000 to learn that.
And the number in Raleigh is 919-USA-7000. That's 919-872-7000.
And I do it all the time in my office. If you call my office during the week, I'll be happy to do it for you.
Thank you very much for taking up the time this evening.
And thank you so much for calling, Bill.
Bye-bye.
All right, you take care.
Good night.
Visit us on our website at lfmadvisor.com. Well, Doug, another interesting article featured about dividends. Reinvest, repeat for decades. What is that all about?
I like that approach. Of course, that approach is really it's the approach that Buffett uses when he looks. It's the approach that ones like Jim Dunton and Rothenberg and some of the managers of mutual funds that are looking at the fundamentals of a company. And what they're really saying there is that dividend yields are a very good indicator of how you can evaluate the long-term prospects of the stock of a company. Because if a company is issuing its dividends, that means it's making profits.
Right.
And if they're gathering up cash at the same time, which a lot of these companies are, then you can be looking, at least in my opinion, and I'm sure the article pointed at the same thing, you can be looking at mutual funds who are focusing on stocks that have dividends. And those stocks that have dividends inside the mutual fund, if they are reinvesting, the value of your fund can go down, but the dividends reinvested can make your money go up. So even though the NAV of the fund may be going down for a period of time, the reinvested dividends can be buying more shares.
More shares.
More shares.
Right.
So what you have is you've really turned lemon into lemonade. So when the value of those stocks goes up and the mutual fund value goes up, you have more shares and you actually have increased the value of your investment because of the dividend reinvestment. I think this makes a lot of sense, and I like to use it myself with our clients. There's no doubt that it's a very positive way to safely walk through the turbulence, and it's a little boring sometime, but I think it works.
So don't panic. Stay in the market.
Stay with your managers. If your managers are using dividend reinvest philosophy, then and if you've got an acceptable return over the last 10-15 years, then at least you've got some reason to think that you will continue to do well. But select your managers with the help of a certified financial planner.
And be consistent, right?
Be consistent.
Be consistent. And work with a financial planner that can assist you in reaching your goals. Everybody have a great week.
Been listening to Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis. Money Matters provides you with a personal financial hotline on any subject where money really matters. For more information, you can call Doug and Linda in Raleigh at 872-7000. That's USA 7000. Listen again next Sunday at 6:05 for Money Matters with Doug and Linda Lewis on 680 WPTF.